to their
yeah
friends at the
and,
same
you know,
time.
That's what Hollywood yeah. relies on. Hollywood, I don't know what, they're at a crisis right now, but before they used to say they need a big blockbuster every now and then to pay for all the independent quirky movies that aren't that popular always. So they picked on, they went for the cartoon characters, the comic book heroes. And they're lousy. I haven't seen many of them, but I don't like them. It's too cliche and flat. But the
yeah.
The people want that homogeneity of entertainment. So you're going to have a big mega hits for perverse reasons, for neurotic reasons. It really has nothing to do with it being culture. People want a mass sharing of emotion. You could say it's a nostalgia for analog media.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I feel like the biggest hit of the year, as far as movies, is the Florida Project in my world, and that was filmed on an iPhone. So that's a legitimate movie circulating theaters that was filmed on an iPhone.
The Florida Project, is that a big hit?
I feel like it was maybe done for Sundance or something like that. But those kind of movies are not, it's irrelevant. Blockbusters, that is a blockbuster now if it's the most streamed movie the day it's released on a streaming network. So.
I used to think it was. Is Florida Project a blockbuster?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. The equivalent of what that would be in streaming world, yes. But it wasn't
there was some movie, something made the biggest profit ever. What was the movie the past couple of months? Steven Spielberg, was it? He made the biggest sales ever. I don't know what the movie was. Might have been a cartoon thing. But this Florida Project's not like that. He put
no.
records, $50 billion or something.
What was it?
Even
it wasn't Coco. That was a while ago, wasn't it?
No, this is a couple months ago. So I'll just put in Spielberg biggest profit. See what comes up. Biggest moneymaker. Yeah, it says. He's the first director to gross $10 billion at the box office. So what is the movie? It's called Ready Player One. I don't even
crazy.
Know.
I'm not even aware. That's amazing. Well, okay, wait. A lot of people...
Listen to this. Listen to what it says. Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One has officially made him the first director whose films, oh, that's the total, have globally taken in over $10 billion.
Well, and I was going to say, think about how much it costs to go to a movie, too.
Yeah, it's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, significantly. So,
I was thinking that today, earlier today, resonating with today, I was thinking about what if I went to a theater and it's not appealing at all because I can sit here and watch a movie and then I go check my email and then check other stuff. I can hop around from different media, read a book, you know, it's more done. And we're getting used to doing a lot of multitasking, different kinds of information intake.
As well as not being poisoned with homogenous sludge on your popcorn, not get bad bugs.
Assholes.
Yeah. And people like, put it on their cell phones.
Right, so his filmography, they're talking about his total, I guess. His movies were Jurassic Park, E.T., Close Encounters, Schindler's List, Jaws, the entire Indiana Jones franchise. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 movies. Okay, so that's not a Ready Player One. So what do we call it? The biggest, 10 box office, no, that's Spielberg. What are the top movies? biggest moneymaker?
See, that's the thing, though. Currency isn't necessarily money, so money making, yeah, I never heard of that movie. It's interesting that it made the most money.
Okay, so here's the highest grossing films. Avatar in 2009, Titanic is number two in 1997, Star Wars The Force Awakens 2015, Avengers Infinity War 2018, Jurassic World 2015, The Avengers, no, Jurassic World, that must have been an update because that's a 90s movie. Jurassic Park, oh yeah, I see. The Avengers 2012, Furious 7 2015, another Avengers movie 2015, Black Panther 2018, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 2011, Star Wars The Last Jedi 2017. So they're the biggest, I think that part of it is they're more efficient at getting the movies out all over the world, so they get a bigger global audience.
Mm.
But Avatar is the biggest grossing movie. It was a great movie. It was interesting. It was the last movie I went to in a cinema.
Really?
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, it was unique. You know, you had to go there and put the glasses on.
I went because it was unique, and I got to put those glasses on, and I thought, I'm not going to do this anymore, and I haven't been back.
Yeah, you know, I'd be a lousy film reviewer. They have to be relatively excitable about whatever new movie that they've seen that they're for. They can put down movies. But I would go, my review would be, yeah, it was okay, not as good as McLuhan or Zappa. Ion's better. You know, if I was an honest film, professional film reviewer, I wouldn't get excited about anything. What? You know what? Billions. The TV series Billions is getting pretty interesting because it shows the complexity of law, because everybody's so imploded and everybody's overlapping. Like McLuhan said, every politician has a conflict of interest because there's so many different environments you're contradicting yourself. And the Billion shows that in law. And then I watched this movie last night. Ed recommended it, Backstabbing for Beginners, which was about the oil and food scandal in the United Nations in 2002-2003. That really showed everybody's guilty, everybody's involved. I mean, in the scandal, there were like 56 countries, thousands of institutions and banks in on the conspiracy to let Saddam steal the money for food and recycle it. Like, everybody was all involved in it because the economy was so imploded. If you're going, you know, as Ian says, you had to have the Iraqi war to have any movement in the economy. So everybody jumps in. It's like PAC reporting. Everybody's running around looking at whatever the top story of the day is.
You know, it pains me to admit this, but I'm watching Mad Men. I'm on season 2, episode 7. I've never seen it. I have to keep stopping it. I get very emotional. It's a wonderful show. It's like Tears of Joy. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is so good. I get emotional out of joy. It's just a wonderful show.
About it?
First thing that really got me was the Gentleman of the Whales, and he starts doing the hobo graffiti, and it's really close to real hobo graffiti. And so like the flashback of the main character when he's a child, a lot of those flashbacks get me out there with that. I just think it's blatant nostalgia, so it satisfies kind of a homesick feeling to me.
Well, I watched it for about 5 minutes, and it just had the cliche flirting in the office. You know, I said, oh, fuck this shit. You know, it's supposed
to... I the dialogue of it. I like the candor of the product placement. I like the brainstorming sessions that they have. I think it's pretty cool.
I'm telling you how advertising was before the Android meme.
Right. That's what I mean. It's a very nostalgic, romanticized kind of view of that time period that I don't really know for sure what happened. So I can't.
Show you the people, the characters getting cancer and all the bullshit that happens in the 70s to these people.
Well, that's a big part of it, is cigarettes. It's making me really think how much I like cigarettes.
Smoking?
I'm smoking, and they're like, I don't know where I can go all the time. And I'm going, oh, hey, that's an obvious source of anxiety. I'm literally just making my nervous system really agitated every time I do that.
So it was a source of energy for people, smoking.
Well, for me, yeah. And I can see that really clearly on the show, because they're all going, why do I feel this electric buzz? I'm going like, I'm doing it right now, holding it with the media, as they take a drag off from the cigarette, don't talk about feeling an electric buzz, or the housewives will get a despondent look, they'll light a cigarette, and then they'll say something really bitchy. They'll get attitude out of something. And it makes me look at myself and say, wow, hey, maybe if I didn't smoke cigarettes, I wouldn't feel so hyper-vigilant. I've underestimated the power of cigarettes because narcotics are so obviously a bad thing, and prescription pills are so obviously bad. But when we really sat down and thought about how horrible cigarettes make me feel, anybody
regularly now? You see?
Oh my god, yeah. Like, I never even thought about that as effective, but I also have full knowledge of what that does in my body, and I know damn well what that's doing to my nervous system.
You
didn't get the emotional
You weren't aware of the emotional system.
I just didn't want to accept it. I still don't want to accept it. I still want to smoke cigarettes. That's just something watching Mad Men made that not ignorable anymore to me.
Well, there you go. Okay. Enough about you, Sarah. Now, your phone's all fucked up, you know. You got this stupid vibratory effect.
Yeah. And it's the electronic environment that we're in that happens this time every show, and everybody says no. I'll hang out and talk to you
all night. All night. Your phone's blurry all night. We can make it out, but people are complaining. They find it irritating. So
yeah, I didn't address it. Started about 2 hours ago, and it's going to get worse, so I'll probably just hang out.
Well, okay, so let's go back to some analysis here, Bert. Isn't it amazing that I said Donald Trump in 1990 is global art form of business?
Yes, that goes that goes back before cash flow. That's even before cash flow when he was brought up.
What do you mean?
Trump, I mean, because you and Ion talked about Trump in the cash flow days, or in the, was it 2010? I don't remember the actual year. But
well, 2009, Ion talks about Trump in 2009, and you mean I played it?
Yes, yes.
Way back there.
But to hear that you talked about him in 1990, it just, you know, blows the ceiling off the whole thing and the reality of what we're in.
Yeah, it's not odd to mention Trump as a figure, because he was a figure in New York in the 80s, 90s. But the way I define him, he's turning business into show business, into, you know, being a capitalist, being a businessman is show business, and that's what he brought to politics, which is the B level of show business industry, as Zappa said, for bad actors. And he brings showbiz to politics, as a businessman. It was a new image. But that's the exact image I said almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Businessman as entertainment. That's what he's been. And then that became maybe many businessmen through the decades turned business into entertainment because of the media publicity, but then he brought it into politics, which hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
So what do you say to that, Sarah? That get your mind off cigarettes?
I think she hung up.
Oh, yeah, she's not here. Right. And who is this Seattle person? Why don't you speak? We should call a Seattle number. Let's see what happens if we call it. I'm going to call on the other phone. Let's see who answers. Then I might phone Sue Bone. Find out what the fuck. Wake her up in the middle of the night and say, what the fuck? Okay, so there's the... Shut up! I don't know about fucking shit. Can you hear that, Bert?
Yes. It's ringing.
Business, something services.
Hmm.
Let's check that. Let's redial that. How do you redial it? Okay. Oh, it reminds me, today is May 19th. That's the date of the great 14th tailgate. We had Worcester on. We talked to Martin Luther King. We talked to Gurdjieff. Talked about a million babies being born when a baby's born. Very in-depth tailgate with Ion back in 2010, May 19, 2010. And here it is, a big day for Ginny and Greg and Prince Charles. So there's the meeting. So we're doing this again. Redial. It's odd that when I phone this number, it goes not a valid. So some janitor in this corporate building was using someone's business phone. On a Saturday night when no one was around. Poor Sean got knocked off again. Here goes.
You've reached Charles Cooley at Seattle Computer Support Services. I'm not available right now, but if you leave your name and number, I'll get back.
Sound like Seattle Computer Services, Charles Goodidge?
Yes. Some type of computer services. I didn't hear the first word, but yeah.
Right. Now, let's look up Sue Bone's number. And she could be very pissed off we woke her up, but this is a serious matter. Cat? Uh-oh, I don't know if I can find it. It's different places. Now let's try this one. Oh, Sean's back. Poor Sean gets knocked off every 10 minutes. Okay.
Yay, Bob.
Yay. Thank you. That didn't work. So I think that's an obsolete Sue Bone number. So we'll look up more recent stuff. So you want to talk, Sean? Talk about your life while I look up some stuff?
Well, Bob, I really liked how you explained that little explanation you gave about the emotion multitude and how they used the book to share it or to mimic that effect. That was really, like in one sentence again, you explained it all.
That's right. I mean, you know, the author of the Potter Things is famous for other reasons, for audience neurosis. They want to make, you could say, well, the book, you know, had some resonance, but it is huge for other motives by the public mind.
Yeah, it's for me so interesting how people still don't see it. When I went to go look at a school for Eileen, the teacher kept on emphasizing to me how they're pushing reading and they're making reading zones and reading corners. And the more she said it, the more I was just being put off. And I could see my ex-husband looking at her going, okay, just be quiet, because he knows what I feel about her.
Yeah.
But they still, and just to link to that, I thought you'd find this interesting. We got a letter from the high school where the older children are in, and they did a screen addiction awareness day. And I thought that is so ironic that they have this fear of the screen addiction, but yet they're not noticing the book effects and they're still pushing the books. And
right.
All they want is, oh, if only they'll go back to reading books. And from my
perspective, they object to they want to change the addiction.
Yeah, and I almost, with my having to go with not pushing against it, you know, demonizing all technology, I almost see the book now as worse as the screen, because the book slows them down completely. It's a complete, it's just two things involved and drags your head in this linear position. But, I thought it's really, that's all the teachers should be learning. They should be learning these effects, and they'll understand it completely, what's going on with the children.
Right, but see, they can't 100% understand what's going on, because then their jobs become threatened. They're always fitting it into an adjustment to the economy.
Yeah.
They do not question their role. So they try to fit the solution into them maintaining their teacher job role, and it won't work. It's not broad enough.
And they somehow think if everyone just does their role, things will be fine. I think, not everyone, of course, but a lot of them blame people who's not doing that.
Right.
Thinking if everyone would just do this, at least I know I'm doing the best I can. Yet if they could just step back and see the bigger picture.
Right.
To class.
Well, in my memoir, Prince Charles, 30 years ago in 87, I wrote about the new battle will be the battle of mythic stages, and mythic means your technological favorite, your favorite technology. So they call it culture wars, but that's more content. It's an argument over which media are important. So the schools are saying books are more important than the screen. And that's a very, like, mediocre response to the world, because nobody's going to stop the effects of the screen on everything. And you're trying to pick the obsolete technology that you identify with. Okay, I'm not into movies. I'm into books, so I'm going to make people have books, even though it's an interruption of their digital life, their chip body life. Like you were just saying, the books are too slow? Is that what you just said, Sean?
Well, that's just how I perceive it with the linearity. And, yeah, but that is...
You perceive it with a linearity. Are you saying that's a problem?
Not a problem, but just because we've got all those multi-dimensions, it can, that's where I see us slowing down, which is probably not even real. It's just for me, I almost see it as slowing yourself down if you just think linear. You sort of shift from the middle out in every direction.
Right. So, again, studying the forms of the medium is gets the mind out of a rut. If you look at the linearity...
I read that letter in your... I downloaded your book, and I read that letter this week on the bus stop.
Right,
Prince Charles.
Right, there's two of them.
Yeah.
And the one in the book is 1990. That's a later one where I go into my history with Carolyn.
Yes, I find that fascinating. I never knew about all of that. I'm enjoying on the side reading a bit of that.
And you downloaded the book? Did I send it to you?
No, I found it on the internet and it downloaded to my Kindle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's free.
That's the writings. That's the writings book. Is that right, Sean? The writings.
Oh, yeah. That's what Ed put together.
Yeah, yeah. I have that book, digital book also on my Kindle. Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
So, okay, so it's not Fatty Communion. It's not the Fatty Communion book. It's the Conversation with Bob and Writings collection that Ed made.
Yes.
Yeah, he's pretty well got everything in there. So I'm looking through, I've looked through all my old notes, and there's only one number for Sue, written in a long time ago, so I should try it, but it's kind of messed up a bit here. Maybe I should just try it. Okay, so now the computer gets mad. It says, this is not real. It starts saying stuff. Why is that thing being triggered by me phoning on a separate phone? Maybe it's picking up the buzz tone. Maybe that's activating it. Yeah, that's probably what it said. Man. Oh, wait a minute. I found it. I think I got a better number. Okay. How mad is she going to be when we wake her up? This will determine how much she's left the cult, how mad she is. What is it? It's 5:30 in the morning. Ooh. No. Hey. I guess she either woke up and just disconnected it, you know, reached over, click, 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 went back to sleep. So no complete. Well, she'll see. She should see my number on it. So maybe she'll call and ask why did I call. But my opening statement will be, I assume you brought up McLuhan with Mr. Peterson. I assume you brought up the foundation of Western society is visual space. And she'll go, no, I didn't do that. And then we'll see where it goes. But that's pretty weird. So where are we, what are we going to do? I mean, we're going to end it early, unless you guys come up with some stuff to talk about.
I want to go, when you, the last clip that you played, the December 17th, I want to go back and listen to it. Ion is really a good word crafter, because they were talking to you about the dead. You said something about the dead do not cease to be around the earth, and then Ion came up with some words.
The dead see our world.
And he said that there's more non-physical than you ever need, and there's less mind than you ever. I just wrote that. There's less mind than you would ever need. But I was probably wrong. But I was. Is that what he said? Is that what they said?
I don't know, but it was a good quote. Whatever it was.
Yes.
It's just another way of saying, you know, your mind is overworked, overused.
Right. And then there was another quote that they said that was really, if you could enlarge on this, every singularity opens up a plethora of duality.
Yeah, that was a new one. Yeah, I don't know what that one is. I don't know how to explain that, unless every singularity means there's two conversations. Anyways, always in any phenomenon. So there were endless dualities caused by each singularity. That's the only way I could think of it.
That reminds me
of that
duality. Go ahead.
That number I called in Seattle?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we got the voicemail. Well, I guess you can call. They could be listening, right? They could be listening. And I call and I get the voicemail. What?
They may have more than one line. Traditional phone lines, just one, it gets a busy signal. But if they have more than one line, it'll go through and patch to their voicemail if they don't pick it up because they're on another line.
Right. But they're still on here. Sometimes phones are on and people have hung up, but it still shows for a while on the on the board. So, okay, back to your point. Any other points there?
It just reminded me, just when I was assimilating all what you released, it reminded me just what you just we just talked about, duality. I've got to go back and listen to the one clip of all the clips I've ever listened to that I didn't understand one word is two conversations. I need to go back and listen to that because I've listened to that maybe over the course of 5 years, maybe twice, and both times my mind was just like, what is that? But that's that duality. I want to go back and test my perspective out of listening to that clip, because I remember listening to that, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. But just go back and listen to that.
Right.
Hey, Bob, I know what we can talk about. I know I meant to – go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to say, when was that conversation? When was that played?
That may be something that you have on How Ionic. If that's the first thing. I know it's not on Ion and Bob.
Oh, okay. So it's a new thing.
It's one that you go to How Ionic.
Go over to How Ionic and play it now. Is it very long?
That I don't remember. Let me look at my iTunes and see.
So meanwhile, I'm looking at what you sent me, and
25 minutes.
Session, 25 minutes, okay. Let's see. In what you sent me, there's the ones that I did. The top of the list are the ones that I went through the last few months. So I scroll down. It's intended, Polish Moses CERN. Okay, so those are the ones that are on Ion and Bob. Those aren't the ones I'm talking about.
So all of those are on Ion and Bob. All of the whole entire list is what's on Ion and Bob. Now I just thought about it. I didn't include what's on How Ionic.
Well, that's all right. So here it is. I go further down, the Emerald Tablets. Then you have the Dalai Lama, private session, May 28, 2009. Air France Flight 447 goes to a parallel world. Okay, so I can look up session 44, see my inventory. The Dalai Lama is probably one part of it. Then I know that other topics of that session haven't been played, right?
Correct. Right.
So you have the Federal Reserve, session 204, the use of mediums throughout history, session 204, electrons and ions. Okay, so that's good. That's what I needed, right? I needed what was played back in 2012, 2013, the topics, and then I go and see what didn't get played of those particular recordings. Okay, well, that's really good. Thanks. That's a good inventory there. There's a lot of stuff.
Yes.
That I played
like
back
I said,
then.
Yes, my goal is to go back. I'm going to put it in an Excel spreadsheet and actually then go through and put in the time to just to give how much hours it is that you've shared.
Right.
Because it's
quite
a bit. Quite a bit.
So how did you had your own, you didn't have to listen to everything. You just had your own inventory already.
I had my own inventory, and then I checked it against Ian and Bob to make sure that I didn't miss anything. Because I have all of everything that you shared. I have an iTunes library for Ion and your work.
Okay, so what did you want to talk about? Did I interrupt that?
The dark tetrad that Croker created, is that his is that something uniquely that he created?
Yeah, he invented that.
Wow.
See, he knows that McClune's obsolete, so he knows it's an opposite. It's actually a world that leads to Peterson, an opposite phenomenon to McLuhan. So he's saying we're in almost like a negative afterimage. And so the tetrad, and this is what I indicated by Pentad for my quadrant. Pentad, that's the Android meme doing a tetrad. So he's got the Android meme doing the tetrad there. And it becomes an inhuman bunch of stuff. It's pretty incredible what he. You want me to go get it? We'll talk about it.
You can, but I what I found with the synchronicity for me is that before I saw that you posted it on Facebook and I saved it and went and read it, I just did some dowsing just to hear, and I went back and listened to McLuhan on Maui number 33. Where was it, Scott, you, Chad?
That was the last one. Wasn't that the last one?
Yeah. Yes. And it was named Marislav, and he was complaining about Croker and how Croker, about Croker's present. I don't remember, but I just remember Ian talking about that. Ian mentioned that Croker's less than because he's like doom and gloom or some type of reference.
Yeah, he is.
And then, yeah.
He's Web 1.0 when the web was bigger than people, but when it became 2.0 and people could become their own spaces and broadcasters, he doesn't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
That people became bigger than the Android meme, which was a seduction the Android meme offered. Yeah, he's talking about the negativity of the overtake. The Leviathan Internet 1.0, when people were forced to do email and were sort of subjected to stuff and had to respond, they couldn't create their own broadcasting, which is what came in with YouTube and Facebook and MySpace and Instagram and all this stuff. I mean, people are creating their own media profile.
Yes.
So
is Croker still active? Is he still active? I don't see many.
He should be.
YouTube.
But here's the thing: he has on his website that C theory, which accepts all these academic papers. They're not accepting anything right now. They announced it a few months ago, and I got a feeling. I heard years ago his wife was ill. Maybe something's happened on the health level with them. They can't do their web work right now.
Yeah, and that's what makes your space this space, or what you and Carolyn doing, extraordinary, is that the health aspect.
Yep. Well, no one's ever had a health solution. You know, Bertrand Russell, Karl Marx, nobody had a health solution like we do, as well as a lot of mind stuff.
Right.
We're the most extraordinary broadcasting in the history of humanity. You know, once you understand what we're doing, what we're presenting, there's nothing greater than us. That's why it was said on one of the recordings tonight that we're going to start a new civilization.
Yes. Yeah, you know, that's a good. I don't know how to bring this up, but I'll bring it when it was interesting to hear Carolyn and Jenny engage Christian Northrup 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Again, for the second time, and how she started to engage you when, you know, listen to the words that you were presenting to her, because it seems it's what I saw myself. Like I said, this is, I'm morphed in my perspective when I hear people talk and their words and their mind patterns come out of their words, is that a lot of people like Christian Northrup, they're still getting information from the book.
Yeah.
And that's people. Also like with the book, they're very book people, so they can quote books and quote people. And, you know, that's a nice path, but having engaged this environment, Ian's environment, your environment, and Carolyn, there's something more than a book that you all...
Yeah, we're live. Ian is responding to the present with all kinds of resources.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making profiles, making sense, making things up, making, you know, pattern recognition. That's why we actually are more exciting than books. When because we can know. So Carolyn was saying to me the other day, she was re-looking at Christiane's book, I think. So she was reconsidering the dialogue they had. And she said, it's all loaded down with a bunch of hokey New Age talk. It's really limiting, she thought. She wasn't that detached about it when they did the dialogues, but she became more detached recently and almost complained about it.
Yeah. Yes.
Look at Ion when he's doing the medicine thing with Carolyn. They're talking diseases. Wow. And then Carolyn will bring up a point. He responds to that point, corrects it, or gives in, or whatever. But it's live diagnosis, and it's all recorded from 8, 9 years ago. But it's a live interaction, like two doctors talking in a surgery room about what to do.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah,
presents that. Nobody presents genius in a process of working. Yeah.
In the laboratory. Something like you said, on the laboratory, because last week, by the way, it reminds me, last week was a great ending to that whole hair series because it helped me understand a little more of what they're doing, because they talked about tendons, because I've had some tendon injuries. And to hear them talk about it just had bells and whistles going on what Ion told me to do. So it's like you never, it's the thing that you've always said, and there's never a finish line. I heard that yesterday. I was listening to some clip. There's never a finish line, so you can always improve. You know, it's a moving target. It's a moving target that you never gain,
so,
but you continue to go.
If we were doing vampires, I would have some things to say about it. Then we'd process that, and then we could come back 3 weeks later and go at the topic again. Or another person would come in from their experience of vampires or the concept that Christiane's saying. It's an ongoing, every topic is ongoing.
Yeah.
Because Ion is going to include much of eternity, many other realities that he's not addressing right away, but then later we address other realities and different answers. Like even one of the things I played recently, he was talking about, tonight he said, we're going to tell you stuff, Bob, because you're relatively ascended. But someone else, no way would we say what we tell you. See, they tune into the person. You can even say it's a kind of a manipulation. They judge where the person's at, and then they match with it. But that's what one has to do when you're dealing with so many resources that Ion has.
Yes. and then where they're talking to us from. Because I remember asking them about something chemical-wise, and they said, we're not going to tell you because you wouldn't know, but if Bob asked, this is what we would tell Bob.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was had something to do with chemical, but then it goes back to something that reminded me when Sarah and I were talking with you, is that Ion said something that was really, I mean, they've said a lot of words that just have a thought-provoking, but another one that sticks with me, and you even expounded on this, each person is a unique chemical formula, and then whatever, who was engaging with Ion at the time, or how many people, that's a chemical formula, and whatever questions are thrown out, which, like what you just said, the answer is based on who the questioner is, based on their chemical formula, that we have a unique chemical formula. And that, I mean, what is her name? The lady who was here 2 weeks ago.
Hillary Ramo.
Hillary, yeah. Say that to Hillary. You know, there was so much that I wanted to say, but I'm like, no, it's not the time. So I'll just leave it alone.
Right. You mean you wanted to say to her?
Yes. Yes, there's so much you could say, but I'm like, no, it's not the time. Maybe not ever.
Right.
Here's
what's been posted. Love job. Okay, what finish that. It shows you what?
It just shows how good of a listener you are, how you get people to talk. That's why everybody enjoys you interview someone, because they just open up and unload.
Yeah. So Love Job says, Bobby, why you cause all those volcanoes? Well, Love Job, that's 2:13, that's maybe half an hour ago. That's all on what I played tonight. Think of it, 2009, Ion laid out what's going to happen to Hawaii.
Yes.
And we caused this. It's part of the pH changing, the thinning of the veil. So, Love Job, get serious and listen to the recording we played tonight. Then Kyle says, listening to the Saturday Night Show allows me to escape from the frequencies that the rest of the world creates in the daily drama. I maintain my observer status. Yeah, that's okay, observer status, but that's right. We give you a different frequency. We actually let you into a lab of living, ongoing progress, and you witness what we're doing.
Mm.
And then Nick says, all so good, Bob. Then he says, the transition see our world, no contrast? I don't know about whether they see they don't care what they see. They see our world, and they are in bliss, or they used to be anyways, and so they don't identify with anything the humans are doing. Yeah, they're watching our world from no contrast. So what else was there? Oh, yeah, I want to show you... this is the kind of neat things that happen. Let's see, Facebook. Okay, so that's a really good, I really like that valence, ionic bonding, covalent bond. That was a good post. I stuck that. We're talking about what is a God and all that over in Mark Stallman land, and that was great to stick that in there. Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Bob's already matter. Is he a? That's what Gnostics do. People fucking up with the occult. So I wanted to. Okay, so I got to find this quote. I think I put it over in Reiner. That might be easier than trying to find it on my busy Facebook page. Scroll down here. Looking, no, that ain't it. So
I see that you're on a new Facebook page. You posted something about the futurists. You posted, try 5 minutes of this and something, but I can't find it anymore because I have a quote from the futurists that I was going to post on that site just to see if someone responds to what you said, you and I on engaging, but I'll look for that next week.
All right, so unless anybody comes in, we'll end the recording in 10 minutes. So I will tell Bill. Bill end this hour. And okay, so that goes to Bill. Right. Now, I found the quote. So in my conversation with Roxy lately, which will be on the videos when she releases them, she's talking about substance. That's her word recently. Alchemy deals with substances. And all this talk about substances, and then that overlaps with ionic cellular frequencies and the stuff we work with. Yeah. So I found this Zappa quote from 1984. He's interviewed by a classical musician magazine because he's going to address some school as the composer of the year. So look what he says. He's talking about his hero, Edgar Varèse. He says, Edgar Varèse's harmonic concept doesn't resemble anybody else's. He creates substances rather than chords. He uses chemical concepts. Trying to get Roxy to notice this quote. I don't know if she's noticed it yet. It's totally what she's talking about. And here's Zappa saying it 30 years ago. He creates substances. See, Zappa is saying that his music is substance. It's chemistry. Yeah. And I was thinking of getting out his old column he did for a music magazine called Non-Foods. What is that, non-foods? He creates substances rather than chords. He uses chemical concepts. The type of tension his harmonies create are like isotopic combinations. That's H197 is a hydrogen isotope. Look what he's fucking saying about music. The type of tension Varèse's harmonies create are like isotopic combinations, some stable, some unstable, highly volatile and about to explode. It gets into the field of psychoacoustics, really. This is better than fucking Peterson talk. You know, okay, so you're stupid. You're intimidated by highfalutin talk. Well, fucking learn. Rehearse it. Practice it. Read difficult stuff. So then he says, talk about the resonant interval, and he's a tactile musician. The next paragraph says, take the interval of the third, for instance. When you hear it, it carries a message to your brain and produces uncontrollable emotional responses, some of which are predictable and some of which aren't understood yet. That's what he talks about in the Uncle Meat movie scenario, the scientist using music to cause certain weird effects on people. So he's saying, well, we know how to do some of it, but some of it we don't know yet. Varèse had the audacity to put these things down. The real thwarting and tweezing of natural harmonic progressions have only been done by Varèse and Webern. He's like talking about his musical heroes as if they were Ion.
Yes.
That's pretty good. What a quote that
is.
Yes,
it is.
Holy shit.
Yes, that is. Wow.
That's the closest to Zappa's. I mean, I immediately understand it because I know what he's been doing. I intuit it, and also I've learned a lot from Ion. But that is the closest and deepest revelation of what he's doing that I've seen so far.
Yes, it is. Wow.
This is why he presents himself as a cook, as an alchemist, as a guy in a dangerous kitchen. What were you saying?
I'm going to read that whole article. That's interesting.
That's right.
I mean, but
when this shows,
where did he get?
I've got a couple.
Was he a chemist? Didn't he? There's something about he was a chemist.
Yeah, as a kid
in chemistry. Yes.
When he was a kid, he would make bombs and stuff with the chemical test, chemical kit.
Okay.
Which was like a favorite Christmas present for young kids in the 50s and 60s was chemical. Toys.
Yeah. Mike.
You gotta make your little lab with some simple stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I told Carolyn, I sent her an email, hey, when you wake up, she often wakes up early, call us and tell us what happened at the wedding. But no message yet, unless we keep talking after the recording's over. Let's see if Bill responded. Yes, he did. Yep, Kyle's right. First time Kyle's been right. If he starts talking about our show technically, not in terms of old Bible shit, You get it right. Listening to Saturday Night Show allows me to escape from the frequencies that the rest of the world creates in the daily drama. That's right. We offer different frequencies.
Yeah, it is. It's better than television. I mean, you know, having grown up in the radio age and then the television and dealing with the internet, when you compare the charge or what is it you do in this environment, nothing measures up. I mean, you know, I can watch television, but that's quite boring because of all the cliches, especially here in Switzerland. I mean, it's just cop shows, you know, killer cops doing investigations and family stuff, you know, pop star. It's really just really cliched, boring. I mean, you can watch.
And they
three
operate
minutes.
In the.
Watch,
in, yeah, you can watch 3 minutes. It's nothing. They work within the normal medical model. That's the real hidden propaganda.
Yes.
You know, they have drug solutions. I mean, doctor shit is the is not questioned.
Yes. Carolyn sent out some unbelievable blogs. I mean, the work that she does, it's really, I mean, I have a whole library of in my email, and when she sends those out, and I periodically, I think of someone in my slowly growing small circle just to bluster minds up. But the last one, I've got to think of some people. The whole thing of Goldman Sachs talking about the genome, is it profitable to cure disease, really puts it right on the point of what's what the war that we're in the middle of.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Part of the problem is that you've got mass industrial societies. So all of management says, well, we can't afford to put that out there because it'll panic everybody and cause chaos. So everybody goes to the negative side to keep the big system going because they're afraid of the system collapsing. Then you have anarchy.
Yeah.
So it's not profitable or it doesn't fit the efficiency of the situation to cure people. So you must keep making them sick. So this is the, quote, evil that was created by the printing press, the mass homogenized society where you have this big systems and nobody knows how to stop that. They're hoping for some breakthrough technology. But that would be something that Nostradamus or John the Revelator would see. They'd see the future and say, holy shit, they got this big machine going, and they can't stop it. No wonder it's going to have a big crash collision.
Yes. Yes. And then a couple weeks ago, she sent a blog out about doctors killing themselves, which has been pushed under the table. The suicide rates of doctors. I mean, that's amazing that shows you the mass population, they're hypnotized.
Right. We've got reinforcements. Gene just showed up. She'll probably have a lot to talk, but we got to go over the top of the hour. But you with Carolyn's blogs, You're like listening to the Surgeon General of the United States. Think about what the issues are. You know, an educated, informed Surgeon General. That's what's going on there. She's looking at the authorities that everybody runs from because they don't know enough to counter what the authorities said. She can look at the authorities and point out what they're fucking doing wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nobody knows what she's basing it on. They basically don't believe it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well,
love
Gene,
it. Happy wedding, bro.
Love it.
Happy wedding day.
Happy,
yes, happy Ginny and Greg.
Congratulations, Ginny and Greg.